The hour 10:15 having arrived, we will call the House Tax Committee to order. We do have a quorum. Members, today it would be my intention to, we do have a room. I'm not sure which one. Is it this one or five or for after session? We'll be here after session. Members, we may need that. We may not need that. It would be my intention to have House Research give a brief presentation of the bill. And then what we will do is we will not be voting on anything today except the minutes. Then we'll go to fiscal, and then we'll go to testimony, and then we'll have the department wrap it up. And if we can do that by noon, we can. If we can't, we'll come back. Let's have Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you have a very big bill. You've been working hard. And I'm wondering, I know that's a lot of material for the House Research people to cover. And if they could just highlight where things are different from the bills as we heard them in committee, that would be really helpful.
Very, very good suggestion. I agree 100%. I think that's good. I think, we've heard the bills. We don't need to hear the bills again. We've heard the bills. When House Research goes through that, if you could go kind of through what bills are in that we've heard, and there really shouldn't be anything other than that. But I think the Loeffler suggestion is very well taken. With that, Representative Schultz moves the minutes of March 20th. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all favors say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And again, so members, we're not taking votes on anything more today. And we're on a very, very tight schedule here. Tomorrow we will mark the bill up at 9 a.m. in room 10, at 9 a.m., so that you should have been notified of that. And I'm going to apologize for two things. I usually don't apologize for anything because it just gets me in trouble, but I'm going to apologize for two things in advance. One is that we don't have more time to we want to give as much time as we could for amendments, but I think we should be okay there. And I'm also going to apologize for what we're about to do in the next month to our staff. The staff worked so hard on this, and they worked such long hours, and so do members. But we will do the best we can. We'll be very respectful of staff, and we'll keep you here till 3 in the morning. So with that being said, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir. Or Ms. Manzi, are you going to start? Or Ms. Manzi, sorry.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Nina Manzi from the House Research Department, Mr. Michael and I will be going through Article 1, Income, Corporate Franchise, and Estate Taxes. That first section is part of Representative Hoppe's House File 1249, a low-income housing credit, and that has not changed from what the committee heard. Next is House File 1234, Representative David's first-time homebuyer accounts bill. That bill was heard in state government finance. I don't believe it was heard here in taxes. And there are quite a few sections in the article related to that. It establishes a first-time homebuyer savings account program that would be administered by the Department of Revenue. Individuals could establish dedicated savings accounts to help buy a home for themselves or for another qualified beneficiary. Contributions to the accounts and interest earning on the accounts would be exempt from Minnesota's income tax as long as they were used for a down payment or closing costs on a home. First-time homebuyer is someone who does not own or who has not owned a home for at least the last 3 years.
Ms. Manzi, just a couple things. First of all, I will move House File 4, so it's before us. I will also go tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. in room 200, members, not room 10, room 200. So please make note of that. I gave you the wrong room before. So we have House File 4 before us. Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, I guess I got a little ahead on those first-time homebuyers, but now you've heard about them, and they're in several sections of Article 1. The Beginning Farmer Program tax credits for sale of assets to beginning farmers and for beginning farmers who take financial management courses, that was House File 608 of Representative Pearson, is included in the bill. It's got a few technical language changes that were recommended by the Department of Revenue. We've
got Mr. Morrow.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, there are various Representative Loon's bill that adopts the amount of the federal exclusion for estate tax purposes is in here. It's scattered. There are provisions that are scattered through the articles. That's all I'm going to say about it.
Ms. Manzi.
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, your bill related to the definition of residence, changing both the the provisions related to the location of financial advisors and attorneys and so forth, and the provision related to medical treatment days is included in the bill with no changes. Representative Kreisha's bill, I believe House Bill 386, that provides a tax credit for contributions to foundations that make qualified scholarships, foundations that provide grants to charter schools, and public school foundations that directly support public schools is in the bill. It's a little bit changed from what was heard in committee in that the dollar amount for the credit is set at $30 million in the first year, which would be tax year 18. Of that amount, $27 million is reserved for credits for contributions to foundations that provide scholarships to lower-income non-public school students, and the remaining $3 million is reserved for credits for contributions to foundations that make grants to charter schools and for contributions to public school foundations. That's in tax year 18. In tax year 19 and following years, the total amount is $15 million, of which $1.5 million is for the public school foundations and the contributions to foundations that make grants to charter schools, and the remaining $13.5 million is for credits for contributions to foundations that provide scholarships. Next, Representative Sarah Anderson's two bills that modify the K-12 education expense credit are included in modified form. One of those extended the K-12 education credit and subtraction to pre-kindergarten expenses. That's been modified at the recommendation of the department to limit it to children who are at least 3 years old, which was the age limit for, the minimum age for many of the programs that were specified in her bill. It also increases the phase-out threshold for the K-12 education credit from $33,500 to $42,000, which is different from what was in her bill as introduced. It does increase the credit from $1,000 to $1,500. Next, Mr. Michael will talk.
Mr. Michael.
The Article 1 includes Representative Swedinsky's Section 179 provision. It's different from what his bill was in that bonus depreciation is not covered. This is the provision that allows a 10-year carryover of the amount of the subtraction that the taxpayer cannot use.
The bill includes Representative Jessup's House Bill 1869 that provided a subtraction and a credit for contributions to Section 529 college savings plans, including prepaid tuition plans. You have to claim either the credit or the subtraction, but not both. It's a little modified from Representative Jessup's bill in that the phase-out for eligibility for the credit was changed to be more smooth. There were several cliffs in the phase out and the bill is introduced, and Mr. Sean Williams and I worked with the department to change that phase out and make it more more smooth so people wouldn't have another dollar of income and lose a big amount of credit. Next, there's a modified version of Representative Metz's bill to exclude Social Security benefits. As you recall, his bill allowed people to exclude the amount included in federal taxable income as long as their provisional income was below a threshold that's set in the bill. So this is sort of a variant on the AARP proposal to index the thresholds. In the bill before you, the thresholds are set at $61,000 for married joint filers and $46,500 for all other filers in tax years 17 and 18, and then they would increase to $72,000 for married joint filers and $56,000 for all other filers beginning in tax year 19. So if your income is below that amount, you get to subtract all of the Social Security benefits that you included in your federal taxable income. Then how much you get to subtract phases out as your income increases above those thresholds, and what you get at any particular income level is going to be a function of how much you receive in benefits and how much other income you have from other sources that makes up this provisional income that's used in the federal determination of taxability of expenses, I mean of benefits. Okay, and that's in several sections of the bill. Next, Representative David's House File 882, which provides a subtraction for discharge of student loan debt for people who are in income repayment, income-based repayment plans. Then we have Representative Thiessen's bill. I'm not sure the number of it, that provided administrative conformity, or some people are referring to it as pre-conformity. It would set aside $35 million in an account to fund state conformity to a list of what are called tax extenders, so that if Congress were to enact those items after the legislature had adjourned this year, then they would be adopted for Minnesota purposes for tax year 17, and the Department of Revenue could move forward and prepare the tax year 17 income tax forms, including those items. The legislature would then come in and ratify all that next year in the legislative session. The bill includes Representative David's income tax credit for taxes paid to Wisconsin by people who live in Minnesota and work in Wisconsin. This is the same as what was included last year in House Bill 848. It sort of addresses the issue of the fact that we don't have a reciprocity agreement in place with Wisconsin. And then we have Representative Loon's dependent care credit, a variant on her bill, House File 1499. The credit is increased to match the federal credit for those with incomes up to a threshold. Representative Loon's bill set that threshold at $77,000. This Delete Everything amendment sets it at $50,000. So there would be an increase in the credit for people up to $50,000, and then it would phase out based on how much adjusted gross income you had over that threshold. This is also very similar to the governor's proposal, but with a lower income threshold for that phase out.
Excuse me, Ms. Manthi, you did mark for it.
Yeah, just two, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just two quick things. First of all, thank you to House research staff for putting together these documents on how this actually impacts various income levels on all these programs. I don't know if you got, everyone's got this handout, but thank you for that. And I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, if staff could go list the section number we're on, the article and section. I've been trying to follow along, but it moves a little. If you could, yep, thank you very much.
Thank you very thank much, you. Markport, absolutely. Ms. Manson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Markport, that last one was Section 20 and Section 21 increases that new phase-out threshold for inflation annually. Yeah, I've sort of been jumping around because a lot of these provisions appear in multiple sections of the bill, but I hope to only talk about each one time. So Section 22 we've already discussed related to the education credit, as does Section 23 and Section 24. Section 24 is worth noting. That was in Representative Sarah Anderson's bill, and it provides for the phase-out threshold to now be indexed for inflation, which it is not under current law.
Starting at Section 25, Representative Anderson's bill on the refundability of the research and development credit is included. There are two changes from her bill. The maximum refund is reduced from $200,000 to $100,000, and the credit is also allowed against the AMT.
Mr. Chair, the next new section is Section 29, which is a variation on Representative David's House File 19, which is a student loan credit. The change in the version in the Delete Everything amendment is that House File 19 did not cap the amount of the credit, and this version does cap the amount of the credit at $750. The next section is part of Representative Poppy's House File 1249, Housing Tax Credit. Section 31 is the credit part of Representative Jessup's House File 1869, the Section 529 plan credit. Section 32 is Representative Roz Peterson's clarification to the Stillbirth credit that was enacted last year in the State Government Finance Bill. clarifying who would claim the credit in the case of a surrogate parent, surrogate mother. Section 33 is Representative Erdahl's credit for teachers who get a master's degree. And I think that this version is the first version heard in committee that has the change in which the teacher would only get the credit on amounts they actually paid. So if their school district is reimbursing them for their education, they won't be able to claim the credit on those amounts. That may have been heard in an amendment in committee, but I don't recall at what step that came in. Section 34 contains most of the language related to Representative Precia's equity and opportunity in education tax credit that I already discussed. Section 35 is the Social Security substance. Then we have Section 179. Are we done?
I think we've gone through all of the bills that are in Article 1. The one addition is on Section 49. We include from the governor's bill the eminent domain not triggering recapture tax under the estate tax, but otherwise that covers everything in Article 1.
Okay, thank you. And members, it's my intention to go through the bill, go through testimony. Tomorrow we mark it up. We will have all the time we need for questions. So if we could kind of hold questions to land, other than to name articles and sections, that was very good. So that'd be my intention. So all the questions and the same folks will be here tomorrow, so we're not losing anybody. We'll ask questions of anyone. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, Steve Hines from House Research, and I'm here to talk about Article 2 property taxes. And I believe that Article 2 is exactly the same as was in the division report. If I think of a change, I'll mention it, but I believe it's all those provisions are exactly the same. And I'm going to just kind of go through the highlights of the article, but I obviously would take questions on any part, and Mr. Klayman is also here to help with questions. So Article 2 exempts the first $200,000 of commercial industrial property from the state general tax, and it freezes the state general tax at the 2017 level for all years going forward. It provides a reduced class rate for congressionally chartered veteran services organizations, eliminates the annual filing requirement for veterans that receive the disabled veterans exclusion. Another provision allows a one-year look back of property whose value has been successfully appealed to the tax court or a local or county board. Representative Green's bill. It establishes a legislative working group to develop proposals for simplifying the property tax system. Another provision narrows the exemption for agricultural containment facilities. And then there was a large bill from Representative Paul Anderson that provides for more efficient management and disposal of tax-forfeited property. And then a few provisions that aren't in the highlights that I'll also touch on. This article repeals the requirement that all assessors become accredited assessors within 4 years. That provision is repealed. Exempt the personal property of a new generation facility near Owatonna, Representative Petersburg's bill. We exempt the tax on land for resort properties that are on federally leased land, but we exempt them from property taxes for the land only. They of course still pay on their buildings. There's a provision that allows residents of manufactured home park cooperatives to include their ground lease payments when applying for the property tax refund. That was Representative Peterson's bill. Change in the definition of agricultural property will also include property placed into conservation into a a conservation program that's administered by a local agency. Currently, that allowance is the case for properties in Road and Rim or CRP. This would extend that to local conservation programs. Representative Garofalo's proposal to treat garage condominiums as the same as Class 4BB as homestead, or excuse me, residential non-homestead property. Another small change to the disabled veteran provision that allows a spouse to qualify if the spouse's spouse was eligible for the disabled veteran but passed away before they actually started to receive the benefit of the program, or allow the spouse to receive it. Representative Heintzman's proposal to equalize the penalties for first and half late payments of property taxes is adopted. And I think those were the main provisions I was going to mention.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Heintz. Mr. Klayman? Okay. We will go next to Ms. Dalton. And again, we'll have all sorts of time tomorrow for questions. We're going to try and get the overview done here today. Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Pat Dalton with House Research, and you get to hear my voice for a while now.
Oh, wonderful.
Article 3, Property Taxpayer Empowerment Act. This is actually House File 654, Representative Draskowski's. This was also included in 848 as it left the House last year, or 2 years ago. It does two things. One is it requires that county, city, and school district referendum ballot questions all be held either on a November general election or the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November of an even or odd-numbered year. It still allows elections of persons to office or elections related to disasters and emergencies to happen at special elections. And then it establishes the Property Taxpayer Empowerment Act, which provides that if a city or county with a population of 500 or more increases its property taxes, the citizens have the option through a reverse referendum to petition for a vote on levy increase in the future year. And that is Article 3.
Article 4.
Article 4 is the sales and use tax article. Sections 1, 22, and 23 are Representative Rarick's Bill 2252 related to establishing a dedicated portion of the sales tax revenue related to fireworks going into a fire assistance grant account. Sections 2 and 9 are Representative David's House File 301 related to the Minnesota State High School League exemption being reinstated. Section 3 is Representative Dabney's House File 306 related to instructional materials. Section 4 is Representative McDonald's House File 1360 related to herbicides for invasive aquatic species. Sections 5 and 7 are Representative Bliss's bill related to the expansion of telecommunication sales tax exemption to cover wires, conduit, cable, and poles. Sections 6 and I know there's another one I'll come up with it. 26 are from Representative David's House File 2328 related to the Super Bowl provisions. Sections 8 and 10 are Representative Marquardt's bill related to providing a sales tax for the Detroit Lakes Community Center. Section 11 is Representative Will's bill expanding the number of days that fundraising events by nonprofits can be held on leased property from 5 to 10 days. Section 12 is Representative McDonald's City Celebration Bill. Section 13 is Representative Olson's sales tax exemption for the Duluth Heritage Sports Center ice arenas. Section 14 is Representative Anderson's exemption for the City of Plymouth for their ice arena and other city-owned facilities. Section 15 is House File 299, Representative Skodinski's exemption for construction materials purchased by contractors for local governments and nonprofits. Sections 16 and 17 relate to sales tax exemptions for the fires in Medelia and Melrose. 18 and 19 and 20 just handle the refunds. Section 21 and Section 27 are new, and basically what these two provisions do is they make sure that the Outdoor Heritage Fund is held harmless in fiscal years 2018 and 2019 from all of the changes in sales tax exemptions that's occurring in this bill and also in Article 10 in the tobacco taxes. Section 24 is Representative Gunther's House File 504, providing an exemption for the nonprofit grocery store in the City of Tremont. Section 25 is Representative Fabian's House File 2183, providing a modification to the Greater Minnesota Business Development provision, allowing them to have an exemption on sales tax for 10 years. Section 28 is also new. It is requiring the Commissioner of Revenue to look at sales tax treatment of stadium suites and suite licenses in other states and report back by February 1, 2018. And Section 29 was part of the Melrose bill, and it provides one-time appropriation of $1.4 million to cover various city costs. And that is Section 4, I mean Article 4.
Thank you. Article 5. Mr. Hines.
Article 5, AIDS credits and refunds. And again, this article is almost exactly as it left the division, with one change that I will note. So it creates a new school building bond agricultural credit that's equal to 50% of the school debt levy on agricultural property. Similar provision from last year's tax bill. There's a new provision that alters the percentage of rent constituting property tax from a current flat rate of 17% to a set rates by different geographic areas that are based on a Department of Revenue study, the rates are shown on page 38 of the summary, the bullet points in section 10. I'll jump down on the highlights to another homestead credit refund and property tax refund. There's a one-time increase for refunds filed in 2018 were based on property taxes payable in 18 and rents paid in 17, a one-time increase of $58 million in the homestead credit refund and $42 million in the renter refund that goes to as a bump. And there's instructions to the Commissioner of Revenue on how they are to develop the parameters to spend that money, to spend that extra $58.42, and that's one place where we did make a change from the division report in those instructions to the commissioner, so that now there is some money put into giving higher, expanding the maximum amounts. There's also the abatement aid program for businesses surrounding Lake Mille Lacs, and a $3 million increase to the, or $3 million grant to the Border City Enterprise Zone program. And I'll let Ms. Dalton cover the LGA parts of the article.
Ms. Dalton.
The LGA parts start on Section 13. 13 and 14 are Representative David's provision of sparsity aid for smaller cities. 15, 16, and 19 are Representative Murphy's House File 773. Part of this was also included in several other bills, fixing the error in the formula and then also providing one-time increases in 2017 for the cities that were affected then. Sections 17 and 18 are Representative Draskowski's aid reductions. If a county or city gives money to a World Fair or Expo, or if a city or county is found by the courts to have operated an unauthorized diversion program. Section 20 is the Rice Lake provision carried by Representative Murphy, but it is modified from the bill that was heard. It basically allows when a township incorporates into a city, their starting point for LGA will be the lesser of 25% of its certified levy or 50% of its unmet need. Sections 21 and 22 provide the penalty forgivenesses for the cities of Oslo, Dundee, Jeffers, and Woodstock that were carried in 848. And Section 27 repeals the library debt service aid to Minneapolis. And that concludes Article 5.
Article 6, please.
Article 6 is House File 586. Representative Draskowski's bill that provides that when the legacy funds, the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the Environmental and Natural Resource Trust Fund, purchase land, that they put money aside in a separate account to make in perpetuity payments for counties in lieu of property taxes. The only addition to that from the bill as it was introduced was in the very last section, which is, I think it's the right page, section 18, and it basically clarifies that for land purchases made with appropriations done this year, the money doesn't have to go into this in perpetuity account until fiscal year 19, so it gives them a one-year delay. Article 7, local option sales taxes. The easiest way to go through this is actually just to look at the overview. Section 1 is part of Representative Nash's bill to prohibit taxes or fees on plastic bags. There's a number of existing local sales taxes that are modified. Duluth, which was House File 311, Representative Olson's, Mankato and North Mankato. What's in here is not what was in House File 782, but what was in House File 848, the Conference Committee vetoed bill. Hermantown, House File 153, Representative Murphy's, Representative Torkelson's New Ulm provisions, Representative Bennett's provisions for Albert Lee, Representative Murphy's Proctor provisions, the new taxes authorized, Representative Torkelson's East Grand Forks, Representative Gunther's Fairmont, Representative Norness's Fergus Falls, Representative Sundin's Moose Lake, Representative Baker's New London and Spicer, Representative Bliss's Walker, and Representative Hamilton's Wyndham. Representative Torkelson's lodging tax for Sleepy Eye is in, but it has been amended so that the money may only be used for the same purpose as the 3% lodging tax authorized under general law. And I am done.
Article 8 is the tax increment financing article. Michael. It contains the chair's bill that was passed in 848, requested by the League of Cities, Representative Paul Anderson's bill that allows the use of TIF for workforce housing, and special laws that are listed on the overview on page 50 of the summary. All of those are as passed by the division, except that there were technical and clarifying changes requested by Rochester that are made in this version compared to what the division passed. Article 9 is the public finance. It includes the public finance bill that was carried by the chair. It also includes Representative Runbeck's bill that limited or subjected leased revenue bonds to a reverse referendum authority. And it also includes Representative Kosnick's bill that allows the Met Council to issue additional debt to finance transit under its capital improvement program, but prohibits using those proceeds for expansion of light rail. And I'll turn it over to Mr. Klayman.
Mr. Klayman. Article 10 is the tobacco taxes article. Sections 1, 4, and 5 is Representative Nash's premium cigar bill that changes the definition of premium cigar somewhat and sets a reduces the maximum rate for premium cigars. Sections 2 and 6 is Representative David's bill that repeals the inflator on the excise tax on cigarettes. And Section 3 is also Representative David's bill that restructures the moist snuff tax.
Article 11, the tax administration article. This article consists primarily of Representative Sarah Anderson's bill that provides for the directs the Department of Revenue to issue private letter rulings and modifies the department's assessment and penalty authority, as well as the changes in the statute of limitation, and includes two of Representative O'Driscoll's tax court bills that were amended onto Representative Anderson's bill in committee, although one of those that increases the small claims court jurisdiction will be deleted by the author's amendment, since that was intended to be carried by the public safety committee instead. Article 12 is the miscellaneous article. Most of this is from the division report. It includes Representative Draskowski's bill that prohibits the use of public money, eminent domain, and various other provisions related to the zip rail project for between Rochester and the Twin Cities. It includes Representative Vogel's bill that subjects certain kinds of municipal franchise fees to reverse referendum approval. It includes Representative Petersburg's excise and sales tax exemption for diesel fuel used in power takeoffs. It includes from the division report, the repeal of the political contribution refund, Representative Draskowski's limit on land use fees that are imposed by cities or counties, Representative Metz's bill that provides essentially higher guaranteed levels of municipal taconite aid for cities. And it also includes, again, from the division report, Representative New had an amendment that allows Taylor's Falls to have $100,000 authorization for border city development zones. And it also includes in section, an exemption for 6% of lawful gambling expenditures from the combined receipts tax. I cannot remember who the author of the bill was that had the bill was introduced with 100% subtraction, and the bill allows that 6% of those amounts to be deducted. With that, I think I've covered all of the provisions of the. Oh, I'm sorry. There also in section 22, there is a repealer of the obsolete debt service aid for the Lewis and Clark water project in southwest Minnesota. That project is being financed instead with bond proceeds.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to take a small diversion. We wanted to mention that there were two provisions that have been left out accidentally that we've been told to put into this bill, and then we accidentally left them out. They will be in the author's amendment tomorrow, but it would be probably helpful for the audience to know. One is the Out-of-Home Placement Aid for Indian Child Welfare Act. That provision accidentally was not included. Another one was the... another one was the Internet Marketplace Fairness Provisions that was in Representative David's bill. That will be going in, but we accidentally forgot, and I'll let you add this third one.
And the other provision is the CNG excise tax provision that passed in the vetoed bill and was in the governor's bill and somehow did not get included.
Well, we're only human, right? Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, Articles 13 and 14 are actually provisions that are also in the Transportation Finance Omnibus Bill, but these have tax implications, so they are also being carried in this bill as well. Article 13 deals with sales tax. It eliminates the $32 million of the long-term motor vehicle lease payments that are going to the general fund. It will all now go to a new county state aid highway fund. It will go now to a new transportation fund, and it also corrects the double allocation of the legacy tax revenue on these vehicles, which we've also heard. Sections 2 and 6 basically provide for a variation on the dedication of the sales tax revenue on motor vehicle repair parts. However, instead of requiring an estimate immediately from the Department of Revenue, they've actually booked in the amount of money that will be allocated as a proxy for that for the next 4 years. And then Section 6 requires a study to make sure that the percentage that's in the bill is actually the right percentage going forward. They also dedicate the money on the short-term motor vehicle rentals and the sales tax on the short-term motor vehicle rentals to this new transportation priority fund as well. Section 14. Oh, and the other thing that the Section 13 does, it does a number of different provisions related to the repeal of CTIB and how they're going to continue to fund CTIB with new local option sales taxes under the alternative local option sales tax for transportation. Article 14 deals with a new surcharge of $75 on all electric motor vehicles beginning on January 1, 2018.
I will now go over the department bills in detail. No, just kidding. what I'll do is I'll go through the list of changes in the department bills that have been made from what you heard last week.
That would be great, Mr. Michael.
The provisions that relate to the definition of tangible personal property for purposes of the sales tax, those provisions were all deleted. The requirement that suits challenging state-assessed properties be filed against counties was deleted. The erroneous refund statute of limitation provision is retained, but its effective date is made prospective rather than retroactive. The limits on apportionment of NOLs related to Section 382 of the Internal Revenue Code is deleted. The electronic waste registration fee changes are deleted. The local lodging tax provisions are deleted. The exclusion of derivatives from the sales factor is deleted. The rules for auditing partnerships that elect into the federal entity audits is deleted. The assessor and property tax training requirement changes are deleted. And the change in the data used to calculate the CPA, that provision is deleted. So that's it. We're done.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Michael. Up next,
Ms. Templin.
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff. I will be going over the, in conjunction with Ms. Catherine Schill, the summary page, and then we will cover our respective areas.
Very good. Thank you.
Just to start, the summary page you have before you, please just make a note. Make sure you have the 8 a.m. version of the spreadsheet. It is the time and the date are listed in the upper right-hand corner. That is the most current version of the spreadsheet. Just for a quick overview, the summary page shows that a total of $1,161,782 are an estimated revenue reduction for tax revenues. And Michelle?
Mr. Chair and members, Kathy Schill, House Fiscal. The expenditure changes for fiscals 18 and 19 total $129,248,000. And for fiscal 20 through 21, $48,674,000.
Mr. Chair, just to summarize, the committee, the total spending and revenue changes for the current biennium are $1,291,030. And the target for the committee is about $4.7 billion, and the bill is almost there. Going to the second page, I am going to go over in a very high level the revenue changes. I won't be going over, for example, income tax. There's 26 lines for income tax changes. I won't be going over line by line, but I will just be going over the subtotals for each tax type. So for income taxes, I should also add that anything in parentheses is a revenue reduction, and anything positive is a revenue gain. And at the top of each section is a subtotal for each tax type. So for individual income taxes for the current biennium, there's $585.5 million in income tax revenue reductions. And in the tails, there's $719,860,000 in income tax revenue reductions. Turning the page, corporate taxes is kind of at the middle of the page. There is about $97.1 million in revenue reductions in the current biennium and $90.5 million in the tails. For sales taxes, there are a total of $92.9 million in revenue reductions for the current biennium and $92.1 million in the tails. Going to page four, for estate taxes in the middle of the page, you can see the subtotal for the current biennium is $161.7 million in the current biennium and just short of $200 million in the tails.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the state general levy, I'll do a kind reminder. As I testified when we presented the spreadsheet for the division report, that some items in that report would translate into the OTV, omnibus tax bill, a little differently. And so now you will see these revenue reductions associated with those state general levy changes reflected in this general levy subtotal. The provisions, there are four of them listed with their associated interactions. Total for fiscal 18-19, $205.3 million, and for the tails, $331.9 million. And I will note the one other item that translated from a cost to the revenue side of the spreadsheet from the division report is the Border Cities item found on page 5, and that totals $3 million for 1 year fiscal 18, and there is a label error. It is not a permanent allocation. It is just for the fiscal 18-19 biennium.
Ms. Templin?
Mr. Chair, Cynthia Templin, House Fiscal Staff again. So after the state general levy changes that Ms. Schill just summarized, we are at the cigarette and tobacco changes at the bottom of the page on page 4. There's a total of $12.2 million in tax revenue reductions for cigarettes and a total of $37.8 million in tax revenue reductions for the tails. And finally, on page 5, there are just two more items. Lawful gambling, there is one provision that is Representative Detmer's bill that reduces revenues by $4 million in the current biennium and $4.2 million in the tails. And then finally, as Michelle just mentioned earlier, border city allocation, there is a $3 million change to tax revenues. And that's it for tax revenues to the general fund.
Mr. Chair and members, starting on page 6 of the spreadsheet, you will find the tax aids, credits, and refunds section. And I will try to do this at a high level once again. Most items are directly from the division report. There have been a few additions, and I will highlight those in my testimony. Starting on page 6, lines 1 through 22 are impacts to property tax refunds, specifically the homeowner property tax refund, homestead credit state refund. The total on line 30 for changes to homestead credit state refund is $60 million in FY 18-19 and $80 million in FY 20 through 21. Lines 31 through 37 highlight other refund changes, including the political contribution refund repeal at $9 million in fiscal 18-19, $10 million in fiscal 20 through 21. The aid section goes from lines 39 through 49. These include a number of changes to local government aid, totaling $1.4 million in fiscal 18-19 found on line 49. Lines 59 through 60 include the repeal of the Lewis and Clark provision. Lines 75 through 77 are Representative Deskowski's school building bond agricultural credit at 50%. There are no changes on page 9. Moving to page 10, lines 29 through 33 are changes to the PILT provisions. Lines 41 through 45 include the repeal of the Minneapolis Library Debt Service. And finally, on page 11, lines 147 through 158 include the additional things added to the omnibus tax bill, including an appropriation for the city of Melrose, the maximum effort loan aid that was included in last year's House File 848, the provision for Indian child welfare that Ms. Dalton mentioned will be added through the author's amendment, line 152, the costs in fiscal 19 for private letter ruling. This is really a placeholder, Mr. Chair, because we do not have a fiscal note on that item yet. And line 158, reverse referendum, those are cost savings in the tails.
Mr. Chair, on page 12, this is just a reference sheet. The Transportation Committee has some tax provisions in their bill, and Ms. Dalton did summarize their tax provisions, and this is a reference to show the total revenue reductions that they're making, that the Transportation Committee is making to the general fund. I can go over these quickly. To the general fund, the Transportation Committee reduces $450 million in the current biennium and $707 million in the tails. And at the bottom, the non-general fund impacts are listed.
Mr. Chair, on page 13 and 14, these are non-general fund changes. The bills associated with these changes you can find in the left-hand column, and I would say on page 14, those are the items that were also listed in the division report that have now become part of the omnibus tax bill. And finally, on page 15, this is just a listing of the interactions associated with a number of changes in the bill.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. And again, members, we will be able to ask fiscal staff questions tomorrow. Okay, item next, we're going to get into testimony, and then it'll be my intention to hear from the department. So we have quite a list. I've added to the list that I have here, of course, the department, who can testify anytime they'd like when I let them. I have Molly Moylan in. Is there anyone else who should testify for the bill or with concerns on the bill that is not signed up? We've got a... Okay. Anyone else? Now, we're going to... Anyone else? We're going to limit testimony to 2 minutes, as we've done in the past. It seems to work quite well, so make sure your speeches are condensed because we will cut you off. Kelly will. I wouldn't be so rude as that. So, Miss Windsor. Okay, so is there anyone that's on the list now, the new list, that has driven more than 50 miles from the Capitol to here? And I'm just going to start at the top in the order that folks called in.
Yes.
Okay, Elisa Moe, Stewart Company, and then Todd Lillenquist, Janet Troutman Simmons. That'll be the order to start with. And then Eric Haug. So kind of be prepared to come down. So Ms. Moe, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'll start.
Todd?
Yeah.
Mayor Mr. Lillenquist.
Yes, Todd Lillenquist with Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. It's the trade association for rental property owners and managers and developers. First, I want to talk about two provisions that we do support in the bill. We support the allowance for workforce housing TIF districts. We appreciate that and think that will help in developing more workforce housing in greater Minnesota. And we do appreciate, third time's the charm, the 2015 Department of Revenue proposal on submission of CRPs. The department worked closely with us, addressed many of our concerns, and what they did was add some language that recognizes the complexity of various data management systems and helps. They're required to have discussions with us to attempt to minimize financial burdens and cost of compliance in submitting the CRP to the department. And in relation to that, we do have a concern directly related to that proposal, and that is in Article 5, Section 10. And that relates to the renter's credit in four different geographic regions and the percentage that would have to be calculated for those different geographic regions. I want to thank Chair Drozdowski for meeting with us and having some discussions on this proposal. First, let me be clear. We do appreciate the benefits that the renter's credit provides for our residents. But it is already an administrative burden to facilitate the program, and this proposal adds to those burdens. If you are a small owner or manager and you have properties in one of those geographic regions, it really doesn't change your business practice at all. You submit whatever the percentage is. But if you have properties throughout those four geographic regions and you have a data management system that manages your properties, it is exceedingly difficult to comply with this proposal. Ms. Moe is here today to speak more eloquently than I am on some of those concerns and the practical impacts.
Well, that's good. Ms. Moe.
Okay. My name is Lisa Moe, and I'm CEO and President of Stewart Companies. Our company owns and manages 5,500 units of multifamily housing, of apartments and townhomes in the Twin City area and greater Minnesota. We also include affordable housing and senior housing, so we cover the gamut. As Todd mentioned, I appreciate the benefits that the CRP provides our renters. We're in the renter business. But it's a burdensome program in the current format. Let me explain how the program works. We use a data management system, a program that's approved by HUD. It's called YARDI for practical purpose. Because the program is unique to Minnesota, we actually pay YARDI to write a program that fits Minnesota today. My company incurred a substantial cost of this to write this program. Today, annually, our accounting department in January sets up the data and pushes out to each individual 37 sites. Each property then spends about a week processing each individual CRP, printing them, stuffing envelopes, labeling envelopes, and mailing them. We produce anywhere from 10,000 to 18,000 CRPs annually. Keep in mind, each lease and each leaseholder is entitled to a CRP. And in some cases, I may have one or two leases in one apartment during an annual calendar month. If this proposal passes in the current format, I have two options. One is I'm going to incur another $10,000 to write a work with Yardi and write a program that will fit to meet the proposal, or otherwise I do it manually, and I'm producing 18,000 CRPs. Regardless, I'm going to incur increased cost. I'm asking for you to consider having the same percentage across the metro area and the state to order to minimize the burden and the cost to us.
Thank you very much. Janet Troutman, Eric Haugen, and Paul Egger, Beth Cadoon. Ms. Troutman. Is there a Ms. Troutman? Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Now please join us here, and then Eric Haug. Welcome to the committee, ma'am. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Janet Troutman Simmons.
Welcome to the committee.
And I am a resident of Como by the Lake. The address is 901 Como Boulevard, across from Lake Como. And I'm here to represent the seniors that live in that building and have really had a difficult time about a year or so ago in making sure they could stay at the building. And when I realized I had the opportunity to come and talk to you about not decreasing the renter's credit for these people, I made a decision to make sure I called several of them to see exactly what they did with the money that they received and how it would affect them. And I had a pen and pencil, and I thought that I was going to get a long list of things, but what I got was practically everybody saying the same thing. So I got down on my computer and just prepared a few remarks, and it should take only a few minutes. I have to read this because I'm 89 years old and I forget things sometimes. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here as a representative for the seniors in my building who recently had to campaign to keep their affordable homes in a Section 8 program. As I have expressed to others during this campaign, we're not citizens looking for a handout. Rather, we are willing to pay our share of the income we now have available to us after having raised and educated our children, paid mortgages and taxes, and contributed to the health and welfare of our communities in many ways. Low income does not mean no income.
Ms. Troutman, we're well over 2 minutes, but I was born on a day, and it wasn't yesterday, and you can continue for a few more minutes if you'd like.
It would just take a few minutes.
Okay, thank you, ma'am.
For many people, it means that after you have made every effort to pay all of your monthly bills, you appreciate any help you can get to make ends meet. This rental refund pays for an unexpected and expensive prescriptions that come in addition to ailments not covered by Medicare. Many times, special foods and shoes must be also charged to credit cards. Thrift stores instead of department stores provide the needed piece of clothing in the cold weather. We work hard to keep our heads above water, and a few more dollars to help reduce our bills can help us to put a smile on our face. We are asking you not to take that away. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Troutman-Simmons. Mr. Eric Haug, Mr. Paul Egger, and then Beth Cadoon, then Jill Larson.
Thank you, Chair Davids. My name is Eric Haug. I'm with Homeline. Homeline's a nonprofit statewide tenant advocacy organization. We advise...
Please remove the bag from the... We don't allow props. Thank you.
Okay. I was... Since I'm following Janet, I figured the only way I could try to compete with her is with props. So.
Point well taken.
So I just simply wanted to share from our point of view. We hear from thousands of renters every year about issues that they're facing, and the renter's credit property tax refund is one of the top priorities for the families we serve. The renting population throughout the state of Minnesota has increased by 11% over the past 15 years, and during that time, median rent has risen 9%, while the median renter income has fallen 11%. Many renters are cost-burdened. Over half of renter households of color are cost-burdened, and 56% of all senior renters in the state are cost-burdened. So the renter's credit refund, one thing we hear consistently is that it goes towards basic needs. It's almost exclusively spent within the nearby community on items that we all take for granted. We hear from seniors and families that spend their refund on a variety of the products that were in the grocery bag, such as household needs, toiletries, out-of-pocket prescription costs, prescription eyewear, dental expenses not covered by insurance, clothing for school for the winter, school supplies, maintenance and upkeep, licenses and tabs, insurance on transportation costs and other costs such as metro mobility for seniors, bills, telephone service, stocking up on groceries for the winter, Christmas presents and postage for holiday cards, and just generally catching up on our overall household expenses to keep people's heads above water. So I appreciate your time, and we just want to strongly ask you to oppose these cuts to the Minnesota Renters Credit. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, sir. Let's go with Mr. Paul Egger, Beth Cadoon, Jill Larson, Mike Hickey. Mr. Egger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Egger. I'm Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. I just wanted to thank you, Mr. Chair, for two items that are included in the bill. And the first is a bill that you're carrying, House File 1234, the first-time home buyer savings account bill. I also want to recognize the bipartisan group of co-authors on that bill, Minority Leader Hortman, Representatives Peterson, Lilly, Hoppe, Representative Detmer signed on to the bill, Representative Pryor, and Representative May Quaid. That bill, the language in the bill relating to the first-time homebuyer savings account is aimed at addressing one of the biggest obstacles for aspiring homebuyers to become homeowners, and that's saving for a down payment, so we appreciate your support on that. I also want to mention the our appreciation for including the federal conformity language in the bill, which was a bill that Representative Thiessen brought to this committee, and I also want to thank Representative Sarah Anderson for the bill that she carried that we're working on, which was a preemptive federal conformity for the two home ownership provisions in the federal tax extenders. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, I just want to again thank the committee for including these two important provisions of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Ms. Cadoon, Larson, Hickey, Aronson. Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Cadoon. I represent the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank you for your focus on tax relief and providing more dollars to remain in the private sector, and your focus on reducing uncompetitive taxes, where Minnesota is imposing cost burdens that are not found in most other states, that have been undermining our growth, innovation, and investment opportunities. Specifically, I want to thank you for inclusion of a reduction in the statewide business property tax, removing that inflator, and reducing the levy. This is a regressive fixed cost of doing business that's much, much higher than most other states. Also, your work on the estate tax to get to the federal level, another tax where Minnesota is more and more of an outlier. This will be very helpful to get to the federal estate tax level to remove this financial disincentive to remain in Minnesota. The R&D enhancement, this has been a key strength of Minnesota. We want to encourage that innovation, and this enhancement will be very helpful to make sure that innovation continues to remain in Minnesota. And then just a few other items on your workforce housing TIF. We appreciate the support there. The taxpayer rights provision, especially the private letter ruling, we see that as being very important. And then also the removal of another automatic tax increase, the inflator on the cigarettes. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Larson, please state your name and your representative for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, my name is Jill Larson. I'm with the Minnesota Business Partnership. As Ms. Kadu mentioned, there's many good provisions in this bill, and in the interest of time, I'm just going to focus on two that we are particularly grateful for being included in this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for including the increase in Representative Anderson's, the increase in the research and development tax credit. That will help Minnesota be more competitive in terms of both retaining and bringing more high-paying R&D jobs to Minnesota. And also want to thank Mr. Chairman and Chair Drazkowski for the reduction in the state business property tax and specifically repealing the inflator. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Mr. Hickey, Roger Arnson, Scott Kroonquist, Valerie Dosland. Mr. Hickey, please state your name. You are the record, please, sir.
Mike Hickey, National Federation of Independent Business, and another great tax bill, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank all of you on the committee who are such strong supporters of small businesses. And I'm still believing, so maybe this is the year. We really support the commitment here on the state tax exemption. We've got to do it this year. Hope this is finally the year. We've run huge surpluses for 3 years in a row. We can't do it now. We're never going to do it. And I appreciate your commitment to that. That needs to get done. There's a bigger issue. I don't have much time, but I just want to point out there's a bigger issue beyond the family-held businesses and farms that I represent and others represent. It's this flow of people out of the state. And people who are wealthy enough to be hit by this exemption differential right now and who are spending winter somewhere else could easily stay a little longer and jump through the hoops that the Department of Revenue puts up. And we're going to start losing people. And I know a lot of you care about that, and that's another issue beyond us. Also want to say thanks for increasing the exemption on the state general tax to $200,000. We're definitely going to impact more businesses, and that's a big positive for small businesses. We also appreciate the freeze on the state general tax. As you know, it's about 20 to 30% of a business's total property tax load, and it's growing, and it's growing, and it's time to put a cap on it. We appreciate that. On behalf of our farm members, we appreciate the 50% credit regarding referendums. These people have big exposure on property, as many of you know better than me, and really get hit by these referendums. And finally, appreciate what you're doing on the residency changes. It's a good idea, and we want to try to convey a positive attitude to people about Minnesota, not a negative, punishing one. So appreciate all the great provisions, and I'm still believing.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Mr. Arnson, Kroonquist, Dosland, Hilgart. Mr. Arnson, we remembered this time.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, Roger Arnson, I represent the Minnesota State High School League. We'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and the members of the committee for inclusion of the sales tax exemption on Minnesota State High School League ticket admissions. I think you know the work that this money does to support extracurriculars in our schools. We've been over that. We also want to thank Representative Erdahl, who authored this bill this year. We want to thank you, Mr. Chair, for authoring in the past. Representative Roz Peterson's authored this in the past, as has Representative Marquardt authored this in the past, Mr. Chair. So we're really hoping this here is the charm on it, and we will support you in the process with this bill. We really do appreciate it being included. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Kroonquist, and then Ms. Dosland, Hilgart, Carlson, Kay. Please state your name and representative for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Thank you for the opportunity to offer a few comments. Want to express thanks for the provision that Mr. Arnson just cited, the sales tax exemption for the State High School League. That's an excellent provision. Also appreciate the language that would allow a sales tax exemption for construction materials to be used in school buildings. That would be very helpful as well. Do want to also express a few concerns, Mr. Chairman and members. We are concerned, and we've testified in all the way along the process about the election challenges and requiring all school elections to be held on General Election Day. I'm going to let Ms. Dosland, in the interest of time, talk a little bit more about that. There's also language that would require additional ballot language for school elections. We really think this is going to make a much more complicated ballot. It's already difficult for school districts. You probably know are well aware that we already have state law requiring what that language has to say. It has to say that if you vote for this question, you are voting to raise your property taxes. It creates a very challenging environment. And then also, Mr. Chairman, I do have to express our opposition to the tax credits for the contributions to foundations that award scholarships to students attending private schools. I won't get into some of the policy issues, such as we think public funding should really go to institutions that are indeed public, are open to the public, are publicly accountable. What I really want to instead focus on, we think the Constitution is pretty clear that your obligation as a legislature is to fund our public schools. And in fact, under the target that Chair Loon has received, she has not been able to offer an inflationary increase for our public school districts. And so we think the priorities need to be shifted around a little bit, maybe send that money over to Chair Loon's committee. Finally, we're disappointed that Representative McDonald's bill, increase in equalization for the operating referendum, did not make it in. If we do have a less than inflationary increase in the formula, we're going to see a number of school districts.
That provision is not in our bill. The McDonald provision.
No, that was I was expressing regret that it's not.
Oh. Sometimes you just have to live with disappointment.
Mr. Krumquist, please continue.
Yes, I'm well aware of that, Mr. Chairman.
Please continue.
Thank you. And so we would have appreciated had that been included, because we're going to have probably a number of school districts out for referendum this fall. I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Ms. Doslin Hilgart, Carlson K., Peterson B. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dosland. I'm speaking on behalf of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators and the Minnesota Association of School Business Officials. We'd like to reiterate our concern, like AMSD did, about the proposals regarding scholarships and tax credits for private schools. I do would like to focus on a few other things first. First of all, however, I'd like to thank the committee, specifically Representative Drazkowski and Senator Representative Davis, for their efforts, and others as well, for their efforts on the ag land credit. I appreciate that and look forward, hopefully that will pass this year. I'd like to just, again, I testified to this before, but just lay out concerns about the changes in the bill regarding school district special election dates. Right now, the bill includes a proposal to only allow special elections to be held on November. Right now, school districts are allowed to hold special elections in the spring. I do think there's a better compromise moving forward in the House, and that's the omnibus election bills. That includes options for 4 or 5 different election dates, I believe. It was stated in the Property Tax Committee that this proposal, because by moving the elections to November, would save school districts the cost of running the elections. They still will have to pay the county for the administration of the elections, so there will not be that cost savings. We also have concerns about the impact it would be for school districts in regards to the construction projects. The construction window of 18 months, changing it to November could delay school district construction projects. A couple other things. Just because a school district would holds elections in spring does not mean that those elections pass. Data shows that elections fail or succeed, whether or not it's a special election or a general election. And we also think that there's increased scrutiny in off-general elections for school district bond referendums. They're not getting lost in the mess or the debate on other elections, especially in presidential election years or other statewide office.
Thank you very much. Otherwise, I was going to ask Mr. Hilgart if he yielded some of his time. He said no. So, okay, Mr. Hilgart, Carlson K. Peterson, Wahi, Hall, Leto, Madden, Krisnick. So that's kind of the order, and then we've got more after that. So please state your name and who you represent for record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much. My name is Matt Hilgart. I represent the Association of Minnesota Counties. I do have a handout that kind of goes over a lot of the provisions that we like in this bill and a few of the concerns that we do have, so I'll hand that out after my testimony. Very briefly, I wanted to thank Chair Davids for including several provisions, Representative Backer's agriculture containment clarification language, Representative Anderson's tax forfeiture language, Representative Swazinski's construction material sales tax exemption, which will be very helpful to communities, Representative Drazkowski's PILT sustainability language, and Representative Rarick's ICWA funding language. The one priority that AMC had this session that was shared by all of our districts and all of our counties was paying attention to the county program aid formula and the fact that we have 25 counties who failed to receive a portion of their funding. The House Property Tax Division heard testimony earlier this year from counties whose model is literally we do nothing more than we're mandated by state. And those are the same counties that are having higher than average levy increases because
because they've lost upwards of 80 to 85% of their CPO over the last 10 years. So we hope that as this committee goes forward this session, that when we're talking about property tax relief, we're also seeing CPA as one of the components that plays into that property tax relief. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hilger. And again, this is a work in progress, and we're working with everyone we can here. So, Mr. Carlson Kay.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association. I also want to thank the chair and the committee and Representative Drazkowski for inclusion of the ag containment provision, the tax forfeited land provisions, the change in the construction material exemptions, manner of administration, the school bond credit, the Mille Lacs abatement, all the PILT changes in the bill, as well as the Indian Child Welfare Act. I do want to also voice my concern about the taxpayer empowerment article's general levy referendum, which exposes cities and counties that even raise their property tax levy just $1 to the possibility of a very complicated reverse referendum procedure, as well as concerns about the reverse referendum with regards to Port Authority EDA or HRA finance. Lease purchase arrangements. Unfortunately, counties build facilities that aren't popular with the population, and we need that flexibility. I'll finally again mention the CPA concerns and also the absence of riparian aid. 28 counties, based on the preliminary ANTC, are facing cuts in CPA next year. 22 of those are greater Minnesota counties. Finally, I want to just mention the requirement for counties to pay 100% of the share of the operating cost of transitways. I want to make it clear that not only affects Southwest LRT, that also affects bus rapid transit along the Orange Line on 35W, serving Dakota and Scott County, and the Red Line serving Dakota County, and the proposed Gold Line in Washington County, and have significant concerns with those provisions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Kate, Mr. Peterson, B, and then Barty Wahi, and then Max Hall, Brad, Ms. Madden, Krisnick, Steve Larson. Welcome, committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bradley Peterson with the firm of Flaherty & Hood here today on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, sir. First, in the credit where credit is due category, there are many excellent provisions that Representative Drazkowski included in his property tax division report on behalf of local communities across the state. Tax increment finance items, local option sales taxes, other local provisions. I know those are appreciated by cities in every corner of the state. Also, Mr. Chair, I'd like to note the inclusion of the change on the LGA formula glitch for numerous small cities. That was included. That is an important fix as well. We also appreciate the inclusion of the workforce housing TIF provision that is aiming to alleviate a problem in workforce housing in several parts of the state. We are disappointed, however, that the workforce housing tax credit carried in House File 1020 was not included, and we hope that at some point in the future that tool can be added to the toolbox for local communities as they address workforce housing in their communities. Obviously, Mr. Chair, for us, the biggest concern is the lack of a general increase for local government aid. But, Mr. Chair, we realize that this is a very long process. We look forward to working with you on this, and I am encouraged as I look at the second verse of the tax bill anthem for the year, the reference to LGA DOE. So I am taking that, Mr. Chair, as a good omen that by the time we get to the third week in May, we'll have a tax bill that is signed and passed that includes a local government aid increase.
That could be a subliminal message.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, no, thank you, Mr. Peterson. Ms. Wahi, and then Max Hall, and then Brad.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Barty Wahi, and I'm the Executive Director of the Children's Defense Fund. We pay particular attention to the needs of children who face a steeper ladder to success, including families who can't afford to meet basic needs, as well as children of color and American Indian children. We are thankful you included the child and dependent tax credit in this bill. We support a multi-pronged approach that, to making child care affordable to more Minnesota families. The child and dependent tax care, tax With the Child and Dependent Care Tax Credit, that's a mouthful, is part of the solution, and the increase and expansion included in this bill will help more families afford needed child care. However, we are disappointed that the bill doesn't include another and important tax credit, the Working Family Credit. Research shows that the EITC shows lasting positive effects on children and families who receive this, including important health and academic outcomes. We hope that as negotiations unfold, you will find a way to advance this tax credit in the session. Additionally, we are concerned that this bill reduces the renter's tax credit. With nearly half of all Minnesota renters and an overwhelmingly a majority of low-income renters being housing cost burden, meaning that their rent is more than 30% of their income, the renter's credit helps offset the cost of housing in a time when rent has risen and incomes have declined. We encourage lawmakers to reject the cut to this credit. It is an important element of economic stability. And finally, we support a tax structure that opens the door to the middle class. That is why we championed tax credits like the Child and Dependent Tax Credit, the Working Family Credit, and the Renter's Credit. However, we also believe that we must ensure revenue to fund important state programs that move all families forward and secure our collective future prosperity. We have grave concerns about the size of the total tax bill because of its implications in our ability to invest in important areas to the state. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now go to Mr. Max Hall, then Brad, then Ms. Madden, Ann Krisnick, and Mr. Larson, and then to Molly Moylan and Mr. Hall.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Max Hall. I'm the legislative representative of AFSCME Council 5.
Welcome to committee, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our members would like to express concern over the general fund impacts that this omnibus tax bill has. And specifically, we'd like to highlight the changes in the modification in terms of the exclusion for the estate tax, which I believe is Representative Loon's bill. And that impacts the general fund by approximately $161.7 million in 2018-19 and about $200 million in the out biennium. The second thing we'd like to mention, we've testified on this previously, but the changes in the state general levy, specifically House Files 211 and 484, which both individually freeze the inflator and change the exemption amount to $200,000. And those total impacts to the state general levy, as shown in the House Fiscal Staff's spreadsheet, is about $205.3 million in 2018-19 and $331.9 million in 2021. And so those are just two provisions that have general fund impacts that we are opposed to, Mr. Chair. I'll leave you with this, that we've testified on this also previously, is the lack of inclusion of the increase in local government aid and county program aid, as other testifiers have mentioned. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Hall. Future testifiers, instead of saying the word opposed, could you say you have concerns about?
Concerns.
I'm very sensitive about those things. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brad Leto, Legislative Director for the Minnesota AFL-CIO.
Welcome to the committee, sir.
I appreciate it. I will attempt to not say we oppose certain things, but I will say that for a tax bill of this size, it is troubling that it does not concentrate more on working families. House File 4 does nothing to expand the Working Family Tax Credit. It ignores Governor Dayton's expansion proposal and the expansion in Chair David's House File 893. Working Family Tax Credit makes work pay, supplementing low-income workers' wages. It has been noted in the past that this credit is used by working families statewide, especially in rural Minnesota. It is not a handout. While House File 4 does provide somewhat more money for the child care tax credit, which we appreciate, the expansion is less than the governor proposed or Representative Loon proposed in her bill. Working families do struggle with child care costs, and we would appreciate the expansion further. Working families play by the rules, and of our 1,000 unions that are affiliated with 300,000 union members, I'm not aware that any have an estate of over 500 million, or 5 million, I'm sorry. Yet this bill expands the estate tax at a cost of over $161 million over the next 2 years and $195 over the next biennium. I could talk about a number of other more, like the commercial industrial, which I know that a lot of people support. We oppose that, especially as a freeze, as that adds more money in the tails. And I would just kind of just finish with believes that the House File 4 is too large for this biennium, and then it is unsustainable in the further bienniums. We can't guarantee $1 billion surpluses every year. History tells us the party doesn't last forever. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Just for clarification, yes. How much in House File 848 was working family credit? How much should we put in that?
And I'd have to look back at my other notes here, Mr. Chair, but I could do that. So. $48 million, I believe.
A year? So about $100 million a biennium?
Yeah.
Well, I really want to get this tax bill signed, and Governor Dayton vetoed it last year with that in there, so I'm concerned that we got to get this thing cleaned up so the governor will sign it. Okay. Ms. Madden and Ms. Krznick, Larson, and Molly. Please state your name and who you represent for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I'd like to start by thanking you for including an expansion of the Child and Dependent Care Credit to better reflect today's cost of child care and to make the credit available to more moderate-income families. We are, of course, disappointed that the Working Family Credit expansion is not in this bill. That was a major component of the 2016 tax bill that focused on Minnesotans across the state working their way into the middle class, including getting our younger workers off to a successful start. I look forward as this session progresses with continuing to work with you on that issue. I do need to express my strong concerns about the provisions in this bill to cut the renter's credit. Minnesota renters who receive this credit would lose more than $41 million a year in refunds. 70% of those who receive the credit have household incomes, $31,000 or less, and many are seniors and people with disabilities. So these provisions feel very out of place in a bill that provides tax cuts for many others. Also want to express a concern about the size of the tax cuts overall. As you know, federal policymakers are considering large-scale changes that could dramatically reduce federal funding to the state. Those proposals certainly are still in motion, but the revenue loss to the state could be measured in the billions of dollars. So we think this is a time for caution and for the state to maintain the maximum amount of capacity to respond to the needs of our residents in the face of those federal changes. So in that context, we would urge you to exercise some caution about making tax cuts of this size. We're especially concerned about the impact in the 2021 biennium and some of the cuts that are large or grow in size. And I would mention Social Security subtraction, which is over $400 million in the next biennium, the estate tax cuts, which are near $200 million in the next biennium, and the reductions in the statewide levy, more than $300 million in the next biennium. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Ann Krznick, and then Steve Larsh, and then Molly, and then Ms. Nauman. Please state your name who represents the record, please.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Anna Ashby from the Joint Religious Legislative Coalition. We are a statewide organization that represents the Catholic, Jewish, Muslim, and Protestant communities in Minnesota. I'm here to address concerns about the impact of the omnibus tax bill on low and moderate income Minnesotans. We appreciate the expansion of the Child and Dependent Care Credit and know that it will make a meaningful difference in the budgets of families. But we are disappointed that there's no expansion of the Working Family Credit, which provides tax relief for low and moderate income Minnesotans who are working to move into the middle class. The Working Family Credit promotes work and puts money directly into the communities of our state. Our faith communities see how the credit is spent for needed car repairs, for paying off bills, and for purchasing coats and shoes for children. We also want to express concern about the reduction of the renter's credit, which provides property tax relief for lower-income Minnesotans, including seniors and people with disabilities. Minnesota's faith communities ask you to consider the needs of our lowest-income neighbors as we move forward in session. We ask that you focus efforts to provide tax relief to those who need it most. Thank you.
Thank you. I have Mr. Larson, Molly, Ms. Nauman, Amy, Jeff, John, and Doug. Okay, Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Steve Larson, and I'm with the ARC Minnesota, and we happen to be people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And I want to be very sensitive today, Mr. Chair, and so I do have some concerns about the size of the tax bill and what impact that has on the Health and Human Services Finance Committee's target. Their target is a negative $599 million, and Representative Dean is an excellent chair, and we are going to work with him to create miracles. But this really makes it...
What's so good about him?
Well, he takes after you, Mr. Chair.
Oh. He's good. That does not count against your time. That was... Mr. Larson.
So, we think there are many different ways to help Minnesota families, and some of the programs or bills that we have worked on in the Health and Human Services Committee help those families, too, in addition to tax cuts and other means that you're talking about in this committee. One is to lower parental fees, which is House File 1182, which is Chief Author Representative Roz Peterson. Testimony was provided by Kelly Kozel, and she shared with her story about how medical assistance has helped her child with autism to improve and to become participating in regular schools. However, she's several thousand dollars in debt and pays several hundred dollars each month. So relief in that area would be very helpful. We heard a story in the Health and Human Services Committee from Rick Saylor, who 3 years ago, as a Good Samaritan, helped a car accident victim from drowning. And in the same incident, he was struck by a car and is now on the caddy waiver. And Rick has to live on $792 a day or a month, and he is advocating strongly that we move that up to $990. People with disabilities have to live in poverty, and to help them get out of poverty, we need to take these actions. And finally, we've heard several times from Pam Ganella, who's chair of the Best Life Alliance, on the great need that we have to increase the wages of direct support professionals. We have a crisis in this situation, and we need to address those particular needs. So, Mr. Chair, we will continue to work with you and with Chair Dean to see if we can address these issues. We are concerned about the overall size of the tax bill and the target in the Health and Human Services Finance Committee. And thank you for your time today.
And thank you, sir, for your testimony. Ms. Moylanden, Nauman, Amy Koch, Jeff, John, and Doug. Please state your name and who represents the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Molly Moylanden with Clearway, Minnesota, and co-chair of Minnesotans for a Smoke-Free Generation. We are a coalition of more than 50 organizations that share a common goal of saving Minnesota youth from a lifetime of tobacco addiction. Each year in Minnesota, tobacco use is responsible for more than 6,000 lives and more than $3 billion in preventable health care costs. As we have consistently communicated, we have concerns with some of the tobacco tax changes proposed in this bill. High tobacco prices prevent kids from starting to smoke, encourage existing smokers to quit, and reduce health care costs we all pay. The 2013 tobacco tax increase has been a success for health in Minnesota. Smoking in Minnesota has dropped to an all-time low, and fewer young people are starting to smoke. The public supports high tobacco prices to improve health, and we support keeping tobacco prices high. In particular, we are concerned with the changes proposed to the definition and tax rate of so-called premium cigars. The 2013 tobacco tax increase didn't just decrease cigarette smoking by kids, it decreased cigar smoking as well. In fact, for the first time in 2014, the year after the tax increase, Minnesota saw a decrease in youth cigar smoking as well. As discussed, questioned, but not resolved when this bill was heard in this committee last month, the bill strikes the term hand-rolled from the definition of premium cigar. This seemingly small change will capture more products, products that can be mass-produced easily and cheaply. I encourage you to look closely at this change as well as the significant tax cut. The tax cut proposed lowers the maximum tax on so-called premium cigars from $3.50 to 50 cents, an 85% cut. Secondly, we have a concern with the repeal of the cigarette excise tax inflator. The annual adjustment helps taxes on tobacco keep pace with retail prices. and prevent the tax impact from declining.
Ms. Mullen, if you please wrap up
over time.
Over 2 minutes.
With that, I'd like just to thank the chair also for including clarification around taxation of large containers of moist snuff, so they are indeed taxed at higher rates, keeping them further out of youth and young adults' reach. Thank
Ms. Mullen, the chairman is raising tobacco taxes
on containers, large containers of moist snuff.
I guess I'm raising tobacco taxes. Wow. No, thank you. Thank you. As always, you do a great job. Thank you. And members, if you could, we've got a few to go here. If you could put the big bills and everything so we don't have to get in the save file. When will you go? We're not ready to go yet, but we've still got some good times here. Okay, Ms. Nauman and Ms. Koch then. Ms. Nauman.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members, for the opportunity to comment today. My name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, representing cities in the 7-county metro area. And I also was asked to testify for Gary Carlson today from the League of Minnesota Cities, who I think you know is at the League's legislative conference and unfortunately could not be here this morning.
And I talked to him this morning.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you. Mr. Chair, Metro Cities would like to express some items of support and concern in House File 4. I'll start with the items that we do support. The tax increment financing fixes as was proposed, initiated by the League of Minnesota Cities. Those are supported also by Metro Cities. The construction sales tax exemption refund provision in the bill. Mr. Chair and members, that's very important. This is a law that local governments are eligible for receiving, but because the processes have been so cumbersome, it's been very, very difficult for them to actually access that exemption. And so that provision is very much appreciated. Metro Cities also does support the homestead credit refund increase in the bill. And I know that Gary would want me to say that the League does support the workforce housing tip provisions. That's something that the League has worked on. Metro Cities does not have a position on that issue. Items of concern in the bill, Mr. Chair and members, would be particularly around the provisions in the bill that would allow for or call for reverse referendum triggers, specifically the Property Tax Empowerment Act, the franchise fee provision, and the provision on lease revenue bonds. We have concerns certainly on each of these provisions individually, but are concerned also about the direction that these bills would set the law around local taxes, fees, and general local decision-making authority. Finally, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair and members, Metro Cities also for the same reason that we believe this is an issue best left to local officials.
Ms. Nauman, we can talk
okay.
later. We're
all right.
2 minutes.
Thank you.
Ms. Koch.
All right.
And then Jeff Van Wyk and John Dukic.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Thank you. I'm Amy Koch, and I'm here representing IBM this morning. Early this year and last year as well, IBM provided statements and testimony in support of an alternative simplified methodology for calculating R&D. And while they appreciate the language that is in the bill, we would say that without a tax bill for the last few years, and we know there's been a long line of provisions needing attention, we are disappointed that the ASC, or the Alternative Simplified Credit, didn't make it to this tax bill. We want to encourage you to keep the ASC in mind going forward in deliberations, as we would believe it would make Minnesota a more competitive state to retain and grow high-tech jobs. Thank you for your time, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Ms. Koch. Jeff Van Wyken, John Dukic, and Doug Carnival. Please state your name. Who are for the record, please?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Jeff Van Wyken, and I'm with the North Star Policy Institute. I will read quickly. The elimination of the inflation adjustment to the state business property tax will be reducing a tax that has grown less rapidly than other major state taxes, and that has declined by 13% in real per capita dollars since it was first imposed in 2002. The rate of that tax is approaching an all-time low, and the tax per dollar of business value is 20% less than it was in 2002. And as a result, total business property taxes in the state have grown much less rapidly than that of homeowners and most other classes of property. Furthermore, based on Ernst & Young data, total business effective tax rates, the business share of total state and local taxes, and business taxes per private sector employee in Minnesota are each below the state, the national average. In addition, most of the tax relief resulting from the elimination of the inflation adjustment will be exported out of state. Regarding the level of tax reductions in this bill, if we fully account for the effects of inflation, as recommended by the State Council of Economic Advisors, there very likely could be no surplus or one not large enough to absorb the permanent revenue reductions in this bill. The Council notes that it is, quote, fundamentally misleading and inconsistent with sound budgeting practices to ignore the effects of inflation as we do. The Council also warns of substantial downside risk of changes in federal policy, some of which are now coming into focus with the unveiling of the American Health Care Act. I believe the Council of Advisors is giving more sage advice to the committee than anyone else you'll hear this morning. I urge you to keep this in mind when crafting the overall level of revenue reductions in your bill. Thank you very much for your time, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Dukic.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, John Dukic with the Minnesota High Tech Association. I'd just like to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Sarah Anderson, for your work on strengthening the state's R&D tax credit, and we are pleased to see that those provisions have been included in the omnibus bill. I'd also like to thank you, Mr. Chair, for including provisions that would expand the sales tax exemption for telecom equipment to include wire, cable, fiber poles, and conduit. I'd also like to thank Representative Sarah Anderson for her work on the angel investment tax credit, and note that we are disappointed that those provisions have not been included in this bill, but are hopeful that as the bill progresses through the process that we can work with you and members on ensuring that program continues. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Mr. Carnell, then we'll go to Commissioner Bowerly. And I'm going to be very, very generous here. We do have the room now until 12:15, if you can stick around, members, hopefully. I'm going to give her double the time I give other witnesses.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I can give her back
more.
The right time.
Or more.
Thank you, Mr. Carnival. Doug Carnival, the Grand Shea Carnival Law Firm, here on behalf of two of my clients. One, the BOMA Minneapolis, the Building Owners and Managers Association, and we'd like to thank you and Chair Drazkowski and others for including the freeze on the inflator and the commercial industrial property tax in the bill, very important to those clients. And secondly, on behalf of my client, the National Waste and Recycling Association, I'd like to express my shock and disappointment in our crack staff not including in our bill the only provision dealing with garbage trucks. The CNG provision it applies to garbage trucks that use that alternative fuel, and I'm very relieved that that they have caught that mistake and it will be included in the bill in the author's amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carnival. Commissioner Bowerly, we're very fortunate to have Commissioner Bowerly with us. Basically, I'm looking at maybe some opening statements, some thoughts, because I in no way want to cut the department off, and I won't. I will today, but as we mark the bill up tomorrow, what I'm kind of looking at, Commissioner, if this works, is to, after we have the bill in the form that it's going to be leaving the tax committee, you can kind of have some wrap-up statements or give us some more information. So please present your testimony, and members, it'd be my intention to be out of here by a quarter after, but if we need more time for the department, we will certainly supply that tomorrow. But let's go with some testimony, and then we'll wrap it up after that.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, and we appreciate the opportunity. It is a big bill, and we spent a lot of time on it overnight, as I'm sure all of you did, reading it. And I think, Mr. Chairman, I'll just start with a note about your song. It, as you may know, has a long history in the political arena. The origins of the song were actually a campaign song. Timothy Leary had planned to run against Ronald Reagan for the governorship of California. He was an activist who was interested in legalizing drugs and was particularly fond of LSD. And he asked the Beatles to commission them to write a song around his theme, about his campaign theme, Come Together. So I think that's probably a different direction than you are taking it, Mr. Chairman.
And Commissioner, he lost, didn't he?
It's my understanding that he never actually got his campaign off the ground because he was jailed for drug possession.
But now that we got the working family credit out of the bill, hopefully the governor will sign it. So we got to think positively.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I will address that in just a moment.
I'm sure you will.
Mr. Chairman, as you know, and members, Minnesota is in a good place with respect to our budget. And the overall balance of our budget and this tax bill are important components. As the governor has repeatedly said, we need to make sure that we are investing in the important issues across Minnesota, and the tax bill is an important place to be able to invest in our families as well. I want to start by thanking you, Mr. Chairman, for the inclusion in House File 4 of the Child and Dependent Care Expansion, the School Building Bond Agricultural Credit, the High School League provision, the estate tax recapture related to eminent domain, the Medelia sales tax exemption, and we are pleased to know that ECWA aid will get into the bill, and a number of the agency's policy and technical provisions, and we know there are some others we want to keep working on with the committee, and as well as the federal conformity authorization for future years. Notably, unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, we think there are a couple of important priorities that are missing from the governor's tax bill, the working family credit key among them, the buffer compensation aid for farmers who are complying with their existing buffer law, riparian aid to counties and local watershed districts who have jurisdiction and oversight under that new law, and vital support for essential services provided by local governments across Minnesota, including the LGA increase, the CPA increase, and school debt service equalization that were all contained in the governor's bill. In addition, Mr. Chairman and committee members, you know that we have also proposed important changes that will help level the playing field for all Minnesota businesses by closing loopholes and updating assessment practices. And the bill, and Mr. Chairman, you and I have discussed long the loophole provision or discussion, but some of them are absolutely loopholes that we do need to close. We don't think that they met with the intent of the legislature when you originally passed some of those provisions. We need to update the vapor product and tobacco definitions to ensure that we can keep those products out of the hands of children. House File 4 takes a different approach to both the size and the focus compared to the governor's bill. The governor's bill prioritizes tax cuts for middle-class families and those struggling to get into the middle class. Over 450,000 people will be helped by the bill, and that is true even given its size, which ensures we have sufficient investment available for our education, including 2-on-2 on the formulas, and leaves money for contingencies that are facing the state, particularly from federal policy changes. There is a difference in priorities, and I will just note a couple of the priorities that are found in House File 4. For example, in the area of property tax, there are CI levy changes. In the near term, this will allow all businesses to reduce their property tax with the exclusion of the first $200,000. The freeze to the levy amount over time, however, will disproportionately benefit large business owners, like those at the IDS or the Mall of America. And at the same time, it cuts property tax refunds for renters, largely in greater Minnesota. So while Minnesota renters are getting their refunds cut and homeowners are getting a one-year increase only, the changes for business property taxes reflect a substantial cut and are ongoing. For the income tax changes, House File 4 provides significant tax relief to some of the most fortunate in our state, with the Social Security and estate tax changes, but provides little for families across the state working hard, struggling to pay the rent, buy groceries, and raise their kids. The working family is proven to reduce poverty, and children who grow up in homes with more economic stability do better in school. This is a place where we should be investing to help ensure our future prosperity. Minnesota's economy depends on our most valuable asset, our people, being successful across the entire state. Mr. Chairman, I know you are sensitive to the word concern, but unfortunately there are a couple of areas of concern in this bill that I need to share with you as we move forward in our conversation about how to get to a tax bill that we can all agree to at the end of the day. As Mr. Cummings testified before this committee last month and shared with you a number of concerns about the changes being made to existing education credits and the creation of a new credit for contributions to foundations providing scholarships. This provision in particular lacks accountability. Unlike public schools whose obligation is to serve all children, including those with special needs, this provision would allow for diversion of public resources to private schools. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith's budget prioritized Minnesota students by investing in our public schools, from pre-K to higher ed. Governor Dayton and Lieutenant Governor Smith are opposed to this provision and remain concerned about a number of the aspects in it. In addition, the provision to expand the K-12 subtraction is similarly concerning as it provides public funding to private schools through the tax code. We are also concerned about the elimination of the inflator on cigarette taxes. The purpose of the cigarette tax increase and inflator in 2013 was to balance the budget, make strategic investments in health care, and to reduce smoking in Minnesota. And it has been successful, as you have already heard today, and I won't repeat all of the testimony. But eliminating the inflator on this tax will make cigarettes more affordable to our youth who are more price sensitive. And years down the road, this will continue. Removing the inflator will lower the cost of cigarettes over time. And the cost of this proposal is a concern as well. As you can see in the spreadsheet, there are smaller costs in this biennium, but they grow in the next biennium and will continue to grow after that. For these reasons, the governor and lieutenant governor have been critical of this proposal in the past and continue to oppose it. Reducing the PTR for renters is also of concern. The renter's credit is an important benefit that helps hundreds of thousands across Minnesota, particularly in seniors and people with disabilities. 30% of the renter's credit recipients are seniors or people with disabilities. And if adopted, House File 4 would mean that 93,000 of those individuals will see a reduction in their refund. We have concerns about the estate tax provision, Mr. Chairman, particularly the cost relative to the impact. Over the last few years, Minnesota has made some important changes to the estate tax. The small business and qualified farm deductions passed into 2011 already provide relief to family farms and small businesses being passed down through families. Currently, about 300 estates claim the small business and their farm property subtraction each year, and fewer than 10 of those annually claim the maximum subtraction, meaning that fewer than 10 of those are paying the estate tax each year. Again, this is about priorities. We must ensure a fiscally responsible budget while investing in our future workforce and provide a targeted tax relief for those most in need. Mr. Chairman, as Ms. Starr shared with the committee a few weeks ago, the provisions in the article around private letter rulings and assessment limitations will have significant impacts on how the agency currently does its work and would have a number of negative impacts for customers. The specialized guidance program, at a significant cost to the state, will only serve those who can afford it. It will increase burdens around audit, meaning longer audits, more document reviews, more auditors in business locations, disrupting the ongoing business activities of our customers. Changes to the penalty system will create unfairness by treating those who file and pay on time the same as those who file and pay late. And it will result in significant increases in litigation. Today, only about 4% of all administrative appeals heard at the department go on to tax court. This bill will increase litigation costs for both the department and the state. Next, Mr. Chairman, in the area of transportation, we are concerned with shifting revenue from sales tax on auto repair to fund transportation. The governor remains committed to reaching a long-term solution for a comprehensive transportation system that builds our roads and bridges and transit across the state. He remains concerned, however, that shifting funds from education and health care sources to transportation is not a long-term sustainable solution. He has proposed a transportation solution to provide $6 billion in highway funding to fund the gap over the next 10 years. And notably, he has also required that money to come with new efficiencies at the Department of Transportation. So, Mr. Chairman, those provisions also add another $450 in reduction to the budget. So the general fund costs of this bill are about $1.7 billion in this biennium and grow in the next biennium. Mr. Chairman and members, the concerns around Social Security provisions relate to their costs relative to who is benefited. In terms of costs, you can see that the budgeting window in the near term grow dramatically. And that is true with this credit because there are so many people reaching retirement age. And again, relative to the number of Minnesotans who benefit, this is a very reduced impact. Only about 35% of Social Security benefits received by Minnesotans in 2014 were taxable at all. And nearly half of all Minnesota households with any Social Security income paid no tax on any of that income. In addition, there are other seniors who have teachers, police, or nurses' pensions who would not have the same benefits available to them. With respect to the R&D changes, Mr. Chairman, we would just observe that the Office of Legislative Auditor issued a report to you all this year that made some recommendations around further defining the purpose of the credit to help evaluate whether it really is achieving its goals of creating jobs. We think that without making some of those changes in the legislation, we would expect that the program will face similar results from a future OLA audit. Mr. Chairman, as As you know, a number of these provisions will have fiscal costs for the department. We don't have a request for all of the provisions, so we are working diligently to put that together so that you all have full information. But if the provisions were adopted, we would need additional resources. And that's because we currently are stretched to our very limit, keeping up with the increase in demands of new filers, and increased demands of the volume of work we're doing, and new threats such as fraud. In addition, the department is down 200 employees from just a few years ago. And the changes that we would make to our system as a result of the bill will depend on the nature of the change itself. Of course, as you can imagine, there's a significant difference in the amount of work related to an income threshold change versus creating an entirely new credit. And we will provide the committee with this information as soon as we're able to, Mr. Chairman. Overall, Mr. Chairman, this bill will cost the state over $1.7 billion in this biennium and $2.2 billion in the next. And the cost will go up dramatically in the out years. That's because items like eliminating the inflators and the changes to Social Security grow significantly beyond the budget window. And it's important to note that the full impact of such the freezes for the levy and the inflator cannot be demonstrated in a spreadsheet, and that's just because they do have significant costs over years. For example, the CI levy freeze will cost the state over $1.2 billion over the 10 years. Particularly as we look to the uncertainty in our state's forecast from federal policy changes, we need to take a cautious approach to our budget outlook, and freezing the levy puts Minnesota's fiscal health at risk. The governor and lieutenant governor are committed to sound budgeting that maintains Minnesota's fiscally responsible state. Mr. Chairman, we hope that we can continue the productive conversation about both the size of the tax bill and the priorities represented in it as we move forward to move towards a bill that the governor can sign. We, too, hear from businesses that they would like a property tax cut, and we also hear from them that they need better infrastructure and a well-trained workforce. In order to fund early education, K-12, higher ed, to ensure that productive workforce, in the short and long term, we need additional resources in education. In closing, Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for allowing me to share our thoughts based on our initial review overnight of the bill. We look forward to our regular productive conversations with you and the talented committee staff, including sharing a memo identifying some administrative issues. And there may be additional issues that we would like to continue to discuss, both in terms of policy and implementation, and appreciate the great working relationship that we have with the entire committee. So thank you for the time today, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Barlow, and I'm sorry to rush that, but you'll have some time tomorrow also, whatever you need. So with that, members, again, the save file, if you would. I run right now, though, I do want to thank the property tax. How many of you are on property tax committee? Thank you. Thank you, folks. Drass wasn't on it, I guess. thank you very, very much. And as far as the name came down to, you know, I'm a little concerned about my name now after your opening remarks. It was one of the...
Mr. Chairman, we're happy to be a resource.
Yeah, thank you for being a resource. The alternative was just a closer walk with thee. So we did come together. So, you know... Members, as we've gone forward here, after, you know, as we wrap up each meeting, I say there'd be a bill, and I'd say this, you know, this bill would be the second best tax bill ever. I'm changing that to this will be the best tax bill ever. And I thank you for your concerns here. I think we're pretty close. And with that, members, good government all the time. We are adjourned.